everybody. Welcome back to Nastalgia. I'm your host, Nassim, and I am stoked for this episode because this is one that the listeners have requested. Ask and you shall receive. Friends, this weekend marked the 20th anniversary of the iconic film, The Princess Diaries. I have yet to meet a person who does not love this movie. And as my friends and I were reflecting on it being 20 years, and a lot of those conversations revolved around us feeling very old because it feels like it's been like maybe 10, not 20. So I did a little poll on Instagram asking if people would want a little 20-year celebratory episode. And there was a big fat yes. So I'm so appreciative to everybody who voted saying they wanted this episode. And this is kind of my first time doing something this quickly. Once I did the poll, I spent last night doing my research, which meant watching the movie, heck yes. And I watched it with my good friends. And it was funny because it was two girls and a guy, and my friend Josh was actually laughing audibly more than my friend Jess and I, which was great. So all to just show that guys and girls alike really love this movie. All right, I digress. So as I was kind of doing my outlining after doing the research of watching the film, I thought about splitting up this episode into four parts of what I want to cover, kind of little umbrella category toppers, if you will. We're going to start with the cool factor. We're then going to move over to the characters, then the catchy quips, the one-liners that we know and love, and finally the crux, the main kind of takeaway from the movie. I hope y'all see me for my alliterations there. Just the way I roll, being a writer, gotta do four C's. And then I wanna end it, or maybe I'll just sprinkle these in throughout, with trivia. And the trivia is gonna also be split into two because one, I wanna dazzle you with my trivia knowledge, the things I wanna kinda show off about that I already knew, that I hope impresses you. And then the things that I never knew. So we spent time talking last night and just, you know, IMDBing all this, you know, the ins and outs of the movie. And there were a few things that I was shocked to find out. So let us begin, friends. And I want to begin with the cool factor. And there's no better way to start with cool factor than talking about the music. I seriously feel giddy as I'm insane as I look at the track listing because, you guys, I don't think there's a better way to encapsulate early 2000s pop than this soundtrack. There's B.B. Mac, Backstreet Boys, Nobody's Angel, Mandy Moore, Steps, Youngstown, Hanson, and Bewitched. Like, I'm just listing off a few of the artists on this 14-track soundtrack. And I actually wasn't positive about a lot of the artists, but as I was watching last night, just hearing the sounds, I was making just like my, you know, best guess, and I was dying that I was right. Like, there was a moment where I was listening to like their song on like the Baker Beach Party. I was like, this sounds like Nobody's Angel. It has to be them. And I looked it up and I was like, yep, Nobody's Angel. Or there's a cover of that really famous song, Little Bitty Pretty One. And as I'm listening, I turned to my friend Jess and I'm like, I think this is Aaron Carter. And then lo and behold, it's Aaron Carter. Like, anyways, these iconic voices and just the epitome of early 2000s pop. And wow, just wow. So one thing I want to stop and just pause on is the biggest mystery of life, which is the debut song, Supergirl. Supergirl by Krista Harris. You guys, this is a song that was on repeat on Radio Disney the entire year, it seemed like. She was almost like this one-hit wonder, this beautiful girl, Crystal with a K. And she actually went on to tour with the Backstreet Boys. She was their opening act for their Black and Blue tour, funny enough. She also has a song featuring AJ on her album. You might also know Crystal because she had a song that was remixed on the Legally Blonde album. But the mystery is you can't find Supergirl anywhere. It's not on her Spotify. I mean, her Spotify literally only has the Legally Blonde remix. There's one version I found on YouTube, but I'm sorry that the audio is not great that I'm playing. But yeah, it's just a kind of a big mystery that you can't really find this song. But to me, Supergirl was really just encompass the entire film. And I remember in the very, very beginning of the movie when she's on her way to school, remember when she like, it's like, sorry, Mr. Robitussin, like hits his trash cans. They actually remixed a song, Supergirl. Hearing the melodic nature of Youngstown and BB Mac throughout, like you're just like, like you just feel all the feels. And, you know, I did not know until recently that Backstreet Boys also has a song. I think it's an unreleased song that was just made for the movie. It's called What Makes You Different Makes You Beautiful. And that's kind of playing during the part where she is in the rain after she falls down those like bleachers and stuff. It kind of plays during that moment. Do you remember it? All to say, the soundtrack is wonderful, and it just makes it really cool. Segueing into the cool factor, I want to add to that musically is Mandy Moore being in this movie. I don't know a better way to explain it, but just her nasal fry, bubblegum pop, kind of just her persona in this film. I cringe when I see her performing Stupid Cupid, because just the way that her voice kind of goes up and like, meh. Like, I don't even, I'll play it so you guys don't have to hear me try to do it. It's too much. But she is Mandy Moore, and I feel like she can do no wrong. It's interesting to think, though, about just Mandy Moore, just as an aside. We were talking last night about her in the movie Chasing Liberty and How to Deal. Do you guys remember? Like, she just had this very emo moment where she like cuts all her hair off. She goes brunette. You know, then she's in A Walk to Remember playing this like, you know, crazy, sad role and proving that she can really hold her own in her acting chops. But just seeing her in Princess Diaries, I'm like, you just are like candy. You know, you're the candy era of Mandy Moore. So, and anyways, I do want to segue though on the Mandy Moore note. Lana and the Lanettes. Guys, this segment of Stupid Cupid, like, let's just talk about how cool it was to dress the way that they dressed. And might I add, Lana, Anna, and Fontana. Like, who names their daughter Fontana? I'm so sorry if that's your name, but really, like, that was her name? Like, why? But I want to talk about the fashion. And in that scene at the Baker Beach party, which, by the way, I don't know what high school had like a beach party like that, that encompassed all that they did at that beach party with like performances. But you guys, their outfits, like, it was so early 2000s to wear a printed skirt, probably from Old Navy or American Eagle, paired with a colored wife beater. Like, that was it. That was what you'd wear. And it's funny because I used to dress that way, friends. Like, I remember Sundays at church, I would literally wear, I had it's a knee length longer skirt and then a wife beater. Like, I literally had the entire rainbow of wife beaters from Old Navy, and you would tuck it into your skirt and the skirt would be like a fun print and paired with like rainbows. Like, rainbows were the thing, rainbow sandals. Do you guys remember those? I had like a pair of like the original like tan rainbows, and I had a pair of black rainbows. That's like what you'd wear, your like signature like high school outfit, whether I would wear it to high school or to church. Anyways, and then when it gets cold later in the film, they're wearing the jean denim jackets on top of like the dark denim on top. Like, yes, that was the fashion of the time. It was so cool. On the note of cool, I do want to say a few things that we noticed in the rewatch last night that I had never noticed before are moments in the movie that are actually not cool anymore that I think are important to touch on. There were a few very non-PC moments in this movie. The first I want to talk about is just the moment at the beach, you know, Lana and her friends literally bullying her and essentially calling the paparazzi over to take photos of her. I mean, they wanted to catch her while she was changing, right? They wanted to catch her naked. Just that level of bullying, I just feel like in this day and age, like, yes, it would play out. I don't know how it would play out in a film, I guess, now is what I'm trying to say. I think with the wokeness of our culture now and this anti-bullying culture, which is amazing. And also even, you know, Josh wanting to get his 15 minutes of fame. And you see when the paparazzi comes over to like that little shack where they're stuck in, he forces her. I mean, he literally holds her back and is like, no, stay, no, stay, and forces himself on her to kiss her. A very long kiss that she did not want. And go Anne Hathaway, or go Mia for smacking him in the head with the sandal. But that moment stuck out. Two other very important moments that I was honestly jaw-dropped to hear was the moment where she's being bullied and they say, hey, after she's kind of thrown up doing the public speaking, and one of the girls says, are you practicing for the bulimia convention?
Tell me, Mia, is it true about your speech? Are you really speaking at the bulimia convention?
So you can speak and barf at the same time?
Whoa. Like, really, dude? That was just a lot to witness. The final moment, which I think was the absolute worst one that we were just really appalled by, was this moment where Lily talks about her dad.
At least your dad's still alive.
Hey, I thought you were getting over that. It's been, what, 2 months?
My God, bro.
Oh, hell no, man. What the?
Anyone else as appalled as me? First of all, just to kind of shame someone to say, hey, I thought you were over that. And then the best is she's like, it's been 2 months. Like, literally, I looked at my friend and I thought that she was going to say like, oh, it's been 2 years. Like, okay, maybe that. It's been 2 months. I'm sorry. Like, first of all, there's never a right amount of time to get over grieving someone, let alone the death of your father. And then to kind of just put a qualifier on it and for her to say like, oh, it's been 2 months, you should be over it. I'm not about the shaming life. I'm not okay with that in the slightest. To continue that, I do want to segue and bring us to our next section about the characters. I just want to continue with Lily for a moment. As I was watching last night, I just was thinking about how she's a horrible friend. I'm sorry. She's just so, I mean, she says it herself. She needs an attitude adjustment, and she's cute. She's quirky. I love her sexy dress in the final scene. The kind of the open back and the spaghetti straps are just, it's really cute. I appreciate her 90s hairstyle, but I am not okay with her being a horrible friend to Mia. Few notes. Number one, the first thing she tells her after the makeover, who destroyed you? I'm sorry, can you imagine your best friend telling you that? I don't care how jealous or envious you might be. Who destroyed you? You should sue? It was a bit over the top. And then just blaming her and saying, like, you're a sellout. I'm going to throw your friendship charm in the dirt. I don't know. This poor Mia is going through a crisis. You know, she's going through it at 15 years old. She's finding out she's a princess. And a homegirl is not being a good friend. I'm not down. I'm not down. Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of Lily, I would say. And yes, I do think that the one area that Mia was wrong was when she flaked on the cable show. But I think that Lily still took that way over the top. Moving on to funnier, minor characters I just want to touch on. Guys, to this day, I will never forget the names Artie Washington of San Francisco and Bruce McIntosh of San Leandro. I don't even want to give context because I hope that whoever is listening knows what I'm talking about. That scene, my best friend Amanda and I would reenact that scene countless times when Bruce is like, oh, ma'am, we're not all that. We're not all that. And then Julie Andrews being like, does anyone have a saber? I have an umbrella. I have an emergency brake. That will do. Anyway, sorry, I could go on for days. I could literally quote this movie. But anyways, yeah. And then the point where she's just like, I know you don't want to go down to the station. And then Artie Washington being like, that really won't be necessary, ma'am. Nobody got hurt, right? Just, we're insured. Sorry. Okay. I'll stop there. But just, and then the thing that I did, you guys, the thing that I never knew was Bruce McIntosh and Artie Washington are in the final scene at the gala. I had no idea, but there's a scene that it literally cuts to them just cheesing it up, being in the background. Like, they're there. So they received the honor of the rose, the crest of the rose, and they're there. Just a little shout out to them.
Me? A princess? Shut.
Next, I want to talk about Josh. Sweet Josh Bryant. Guys, I love Eric Von Detten so much. Like, Brink is one of my favorite movies, favorite Disney Channel original movie, probably top three. Loved him in that movie. couldn't stand him in this movie, which I know that that was the point, but I think even for like girls watching it in the beginning, I think that the point is like for girls to be like, oh my God, like, yes, we want her to be with him. Like, he's so hot. He's so cool. I don't know about anyone else listening. I was always a Michael girl. Like from the first second, I just was like a Michael girl. And I mean, yes, I do like darker features on guys. Like, I'm not into blondes as much, but I don't know what happened. I just, poor Eric Von Detten. I also think his eyebrows were just kind of in a situation at that time. I don't know what was happening. And I don't know. I wasn't down. I didn't like him. Fun fact that I never noticed till last night that we were dying about was in the scene at the Baker Beach party where he's sailing with Mia. You guys, the boat that he's on is called the Josher. It's called the Josher. So, I mean, I don't know what 15-year-old student has their own boat. And maybe he's just comes from a rich family and they named him after, but the Josher. Like, I don't know how much more like white suburbia you can get at that point, but just worth noting the Josher. I talked about this earlier. I did not like the fact that he just, you know, was in it for the fame, but also no surprise. One other character I want to touch on is Sandra Oh. Dr. Christina Yang from Grey's Anatomy is in this movie and she plays Gupta.
Gupta. The Queen is coming to Grove High School.
She's great. I mean, I will never forget even the subtle, I'm sure this was totally unscripted, but her hand shaking as she's bringing over, you know, the cup of tea to Julie Andrews. You know, I'm sorry we don't have finer china, Your Majesty. And then here, just giving this styrofoam cup to Mia's mom. It's too good. Just huge fan of Sandra Oh. Okay, final character that I think we're all wanting to hear about, Michael. Michael, gosh, you guys. Okay, I have a lot I want to talk about with Michael. The first thing I want to touch on, though, is something that I never noticed until I rewatched for the first time. Again, I think it's just honestly worth a rewatch for all of us. I think for me, just even being, you know, in my 30s now watching this, I have a much different perspective. So I'm referring to this segment as the Michael Dilemma. The Michael Dilemma. Here we go. Let's have some fun with this. So you kind of feel bad for Michael because she essentially flakes on him to go hang out with Josh at the Baker Beach party. And there's the whole, you know, beautiful, cute scene of like her sending him the pizza, you know, with the I'm sorry M&Ms. There's even the moment of Lily kind of being like, you broke my brother's heart. But as I rewatched this last night, I completely changed my tune. And I actually find I just find him being broody for no reason. I do not find Mia at fault. Hear me on this. So at this point, when he asks her to hang out, Mia clearly defines their relationship and asks him, oh, is this a date? He says no. So I just want to say, like, first and foremost, let's give credit to this girl. At 15 years old, she's being bold enough when the guy's being a pansy to be like, hey, by the way, are you asking me out on a date? And he says no. The fact that she goes as far as to even ask for clarity, I mean, I'm huge on clarity. I'm huge on defining things. Dude, he's like, let's hang out on Friday night. Let's work on your car together, put it together, together, whatever the line that he uses. And she literally asks in a very flirty, cute way. She's like, oh, is this a date? And he says no. He kind of says it in a very like monotone way, like, no. So I don't find her at fault at all for number one, just she knew it wasn't a date. She knew they were friends. I mean, he also was just like, oh yeah, it's my sister's best friend. And then as soon as Josh Bryant asked her to hang out, she goes to him and she tells him, you guys, she never flaked on him. She goes to him in a very platonic way and she's kind of laughing and she's like, hey, guess what, Michael? Josh Bryant asked me out. And they have this even funny moment where he's like, oh, did he, you know, ask to borrow a comb or whatever? And so I don't find her at fault at all. She told him. And so this whole, you know, narrative of Lily saying you broke my brother's heart, why is the heart broken? You said it wasn't a date and she also told you that she couldn't hang out. So anyways, when I was watching that scene of like him saying, I'm just royally flushed. Yes, it's a very iconic line. However, I do think that he's being broody for no reason. Anyone else with me? This was the first time watching that. I was like, I disagree completely.
Uh-huh, honey.
Moving on, we're done with the Michael dilemma, but I'm not done talking about Michael. Okay, you guys, I want to sprinkle in here some trivia because I was mind blown at this fact. And if you're into pop culture, if you're into film, you're going to really enjoy this. Okay, so Michael's character in the film is obviously a musician. He's part of a band called Flypaper, which, by the way, dopest name, like Flypaper. And then the moment where he's like, we're going to fly away now. Like, just to pause for a second, like, how dope is the concept of like a maintenance shop where there's also a band performing while you're waiting for your car to be fixed? And then the little added niche touch of like M&M sprinkled over the keyboard. Like, just thank you. Thank you to whoever wrote that into the film. I see you. I love the detail. I'm all about it. Okay, now for the trivia. So Michael's name, the actor's name, is Robert Schwartzman. You guys, he is none other than the brother of Jason Schwartzman. The Jason Schwartzman, the actor who's been in almost every Wes Anderson movie since Rushmore in 1998. I was mind blown. Then, you guys, they are the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola. They're cousins with Sofia Coppola. They're part of the famous Coppola family. They are also cousins with, pause, Nicolas Cage. I don't know what to say. To take it a step further, not only are they actors, Robert Schwartzman, who plays Michael, he is the singer in the band Rooney. I don't know how many of you guys in the early 2000s were into like Weezer, Dashboard Confessional, OK Go. Rooney was a part of the mix. And Robert Schwartzman's none other than the singer of Rooney. Then I have one more piece just to really blow your mind on. Jason Schwartzman is also the drummer in Phantom Planet. Like Jason Schwartzman, who's in like Darjeeling Limited, Rushmore, you know, Moonrise Kingdom. He's the drummer in Phantom Planet, which was another very, very iconic band in the early 2000s. I know you guys all know the theme song of The OC. He was the drummer. And then to kind of inception even further, his brother, Robert, who played Michael, was a guest star in The OC in one episode playing himself. Can that even compute? I don't know. I was just having a field day last night. And I think for me, I'm just very into pop culture and very into like who's who and, you know, famous families. But wow, like guys, these are people who are not only actors, but they're also musicians and getting really, you know, big roles. So I just needed to share that iconic trivia that I knew nothing about. I want to move on to section three, the catchy quips. And I know that people make fun of closed captioning, but I don't know what it is. I actually enjoy captions now that I'm older. So we watched with captions and man, it led to a few realizations of lines that I had no idea were in this movie. You know, the iconic moment when her foot pops. When they're kind of walking away, Joseph looks to the queen, to Julie Andrews, and he's like, I wanted us to go there, but the garden is now occupado. I had never heard that line before. And also just love Joseph. I think he could also have really been in my character section, but I'll just stop. But you know, no, I will say also the thing that sticks out most about Joseph is one, how much he loves Mia in his own way. And two, his wardrobe. Like he is Shaft. Like the gloves, the glasses, the long leather jacket down to his feet. Like he reminds me of Neo in The Matrix. Or sorry, not Neo, but Lawrence Fishburne's character. Morpheus or Shaft, it's Joseph. Anyways, moving on. Another really cool fun fact I wanted to add that I did not know was that Julie Andrews and the actor who plays Joseph completely scripted the romance, like subtleties between the two of them. And I thought that was really cool. They said something about wanting to show a romance after 50 that can just be sensual and pure at the same time. And you notice when he says like, you've been wearing black too long. That was all them. It was totally unscripted. They added that to the characters themselves. Another just a quip or just even a moment I didn't realize was when Julie Andrews asked Paulo to have the girl sign the NDA. That was a moment, I think just as a kid, you're so excited for the makeover to start. I had no idea there was even that dialogue in there where she hands them the non-disclosure agreement and he kind of brushes it off. So then when you find out that, you know, Paulo kind of sold them out in the whole school, there's a field day at school, all the paparazzi's there, it made sense. Like, okay, yeah, there was a scene that kind of foreshadowed this happening. I don't know if anyone else missed that, but that was just something I had always missed. Another line I had never heard before was, do you guys remember at that first dinner, that first famous dinner where Mia has just like her own moments of like the brain freeze with the ice cream? You know, there's that sweet Asian guy that's next to Julie Andrews that he's just silent the whole time and he has like the iconic laughter at the end. There's a guy there who's kind of drunk the whole time. He's the guy that Charlotte goes up to him and she's like, maybe, you know, that's enough brandy for tonight. There's a moment where he comes back from the restroom. It's just like such a subtle scene. I don't even know why it's in the movie. His wife turns to him and she's like, go wash your hands. And my friend and I watching this, we had no idea that was ever in the film. And it's kind of a subtle line that you only see with the captions. But we were like, ew, why? Like, why is that in the movie? So anyways, just these little lines that I'm like, what? I never paid attention to this. And it made rewatching it that much more special. Now for my two catchy quips that will always stick with me. The first.
As always, this is as good as it's gonna get.
You guys, to this day, I will say that to the mirror sometimes. I'll literally be getting ready and I'll be leaving the house and I'll just look in the mirror and I'll say it. Well, Ness, this is as good as it's gonna get. And that's how you know, I mean, 20 years later, that line has stuck with me. And finally, I have to add just a deep line that I think for all girls just really is so meaningful is when at the very end, when Michael says like, why me? And she says, you saw me when I was invisible. And I think that's what makes all of us love Michael is yes, we can talk about like his broodiness, him being a musician, you know, whatever, him being in the background the whole time, but he liked her the whole time. You know, he appreciated her as a nerd. He didn't judge her. He found her attractive all the while for who she was inside. And so, yeah, anyways, I'm not going to get too cheesy, but that line, I think just for all girls, even, I mean, there's so much of the movie that's cheesy, you guys. And even just seeing, you know, like the one-liners, especially that Josh Bryant throws out, you're just like, oh God, like cringe. But I think even now as like, you know, a 30-year-old, like I'm still, when I listen to that line, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, yes, like we all want someone who sees us when we're invisible. Like, so beautiful.
Why me?
Because you saw me when I was invisible.
Okay, before I get to the crux, because I want to conclude with the crux, I just want to sprinkle in a little bit more trivia. Guys, Fat Louie, the cat, is Anne Hathaway's actual cat in real life. There's that. Not only that, the actor who plays her dad, which we only see from behind when she's reading the letter from him, that's Anne Hathaway's actual dad. Like, what? So just interesting little moments where I'm like, huh, I wonder why. Like, did she just, you know, suggest it? Like, did she just offer up, like, I'll bring my own cat. Maybe, I'll have my own dad come in. I don't know. Another little trivia moment that I hope to blow your mind with is when the queen is entering the ball and there's the whole, you know, there's this scene where the press is kind of giving, the queen is now entering the ball. There's a moment where one of the correspondents is Persian and they're speaking in Farsi.
The queen has entered.
That was just a moment that I needed to throw in because you guys, that is not common. You know, like Farsi is not a language that you hear much in mainstream movies. I think it makes so much more sense to have, you know, like a Spanish translation or a, you know, Japanese or Cantonese, whatever. But to have Farsi be one of the three was really, really shocking. But yeah, you guys, for every Persian family who watched this movie, there's a moment of celebration when you hear that and you're like, oh my gosh, they said it in Farsi. Like, Malakhe Khoshgel Daramiyad Payin. Like, what? Anyone else? Anyone else celebrating the Persian pride? Also, might I add, she's the only person who adds a note about her dress. All the other translations are like, the queen has entered, but the Persian lady's like, and wearing a beautiful gown too. My final moment, and this is going to be a treat for anyone who is just a major Disney fan. Anyone who remembers Zug Disney. For those who might not remember or just need a refresher, Zoo Disney was the afternoon time block of shows on Disney Channel. This included shows like Mad Libs or Bug Juice, Famous Jet Jackson, Lizzie McGuire, even Stevens, as well as some Disney Channel original movies. The reason they had this kind of playing, you know, kind of in the interim between the shows and programs was because they had this whole thing called the Zether. And basically it was like to get you to go online after you watch and then you play games. And basically it was like to bring together, you know, technology of like on the computer and then also watching TV. Anyways, that's Zoog Disney. What I'm wanting to mention about this movie is there was a segment where on Zoog Disney, sometimes they would do behind the scenes of films. And I don't know why, but there's a commercial that I remember to this day that's always stuck with me, where they showed one of like the Zoog Disney stars, Lauren Maltby. She plays Marnie in all the Xenon movies. If anyone remembers her, she was like the bully in the Xenon movies. She was behind the scenes on Princess Diaries, and they used her to make a cameo appearance in Princess Diaries. So there's a scene right after Lana and the Lynettes perform Stupid Cupid, and it shows people on the beach blankets, like just clapping. It's literally a 2-second scene, but you see Lauren Maltby, who plays Marnie in Xenon. She's just sitting on her chair or on her blanket, just clapping. I don't know why I can't unsee that scene. And I just remember that Zoog Disney commercial, like her being like, you know, on the set. Like, I get to be in Princess Diaries. Anyways, okay, nerd moment over. Okay, fam, we're at the final segment. I want to talk about the crux. And again, I don't want to get cheesy, but I think watching this movie, I had a brand new epiphany about what the moral of the story is for me. And as a kid, when I watched this film, I always thought it was like at the very end, you know, she comes into her own. Mia finds her confidence. She finds her voice, right? She gets the makeover, all the things, which to an extent, sure, that's part of it. But in hearing her speech that she gives when she decides to, you know, take on the throne, her speech is entirely focused on being outward. She talks about how much we focus on I, how many times a day we think about me, say the word I. And she says, you know, I stopped to think, what if I cared that much about all the other people in this world? And that's why she takes on that role. And I just thought that was beautiful. And so it's not only about the inner confidence, which makes it just about us, but her saying yes to taking on this role of princess was an act of humility and an act of affecting change. And it brings me to actually another one-liner that I never paid attention to before. And God bless Lily. I know I kind of hated on her before, but there's a line that she brings up that I want to play a snippet of.
Okay, what is so wow? Wow is having the power to affect change, make people listen. How many teenagers have that power? What more of a miracle do you want?
They're talking about how amazing this opportunity is for her to be a princess. Wow is having the power to affect change and to make people listen. Guys, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. And so whoever you are listening to this right now, I do want to encourage you that your voice also has power to affect change. And maybe it's not on princess level like Mia was, but whether it's in your family dynamic or in your friend group, in your workplace or wherever your community, whatever your sphere of influence is, I really believe that we all have that wow factor. We all have the ability to affect change. A friend of mine once encouraged me and she was talking about the wake that we leave behind. And how we act and how we make people feel and what we say, we all leave a wake behind us. And that kind of ocean imagery is so beautiful. And yeah, it just makes me think of this film. And we all have the wow factor, friends. So what does that look like for you? In a society where it's kind of easy to feel powerless or like you're just one in a million or one in 7 billion, I still want to encourage you that we do have that power and to use your voice, whether it's big or small, be encouraged with that. Okay, my TED Talk is over, but I really did feel like I needed to share that. Anyways, nostalgia fans, thank you so much for coming alongside this episode with me and sharing in the entertainment. I hope it entertained you. I was entertained just on my own. But I want to hear your favorite quotes and songs and moments from the movie and things that maybe I missed out that you're like, when I rewatched this, this stood out to me. Share on your social media, leave me a review, send me a DM. I would just love to hear from you guys. And I will leave you with another one of my favorite songs from this movie that always puts me in a good mood. Until next time.